Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you see how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives and compels us toward gratitude and generosity. All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman, and I am sitting here in our fancy studio with...
Hey, this is Tom McGregor.
Yeah. It's funny, I didn't know your first name was Hey.
That is a really lame joke. Do you want to start over?
I'm good. I think this is going to be fine.
Okay.
I always love to start out with the worst jokes anyway. We're actually sitting here with two very special guests. Could you introduce yourself? We have...
Chi Young Woo.
And Chi Young is actually the husband of Jean Woo, who we've had on the podcast before. Chi Young, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? How long you guys... I know we heard from Jean. How long you guys have been around Imprint and what you guys are passionate about?
So... We've been at Imprint for, I don't know, since the beginning. So I guess maybe 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
I'm losing track now. So
that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we're passionate about, I'm passionate about helping others. And that's why I'm a physician. So I work in family practice in Evergreen Health. So, and we're just passionate. My passion leads into my career, but it also leads into like, just helping others in some senses and just wanting to do that. And so part of our passion is like when we in ministry, we would think like, how can we be a support to our pastors and in whatever they do, how to help the church kind of mobilize and grow. And so this time in our lives, we got involved in our generosity groups. And so we decided to take the kind of more of the leadership on that. So, and that's kind of segues into why we're here. I forgot to talk about my family, but I think Gene talked about our family before.
Yeah, a little
we
bit.
Have
yeah.
Three kids, and one is 17, rising senior, and one is 13, kind of in the middle. And then we have the princess Bethany, she's 7. So
yeah, I think Gene mentioned you guys have a high schooler, a middle schooler, and like an elementary school. That's just crazy.
That's right, and that's why she couldn't make it today because we're all over the place. So.
Yeah, I know that's it's a professional taxi service you guys are probably running, but if you've been around Imprint at all, you have seen the Woos. They're just really faithful. They went out with Imprint Bothell when we were in two locations and have continued to just be an encouraging presence as we've had to kind of work our way through the pandemic. So if you see Jean or Chiang, be sure to say hello. But we also have another special guest from the far south. Other special guests. Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Liz Nelson, and I work with World Relief Seattle. So we're actually based over in Kent.
Yeah, that's right. And if you've been around Imprint, you'll know World Relief is one of our generosity partners that we've chosen to partner with throughout the year. Liz, how long have you been with World Relief?
I've been with the Seattle office for about 3.5 years ago. I jumped in as our volunteer coordinator, and then now I oversee our outreach programs. So that includes volunteers and church partnerships and community relationships, events, fun things like that.
That is awesome. Well, thanks for making the long drive from Kent today, up from Kent today. Let's start kind of at the very beginning. Let's say someone hasn't heard about World Relief before. They walk in and they hear a church, whether it's Imprint Church or another church, say, we partner with World Relief. What is World Relief?
Yeah, so I like to describe World Relief as a nonprofit organization that walks alongside newly arriving folks to the U.S. for 5, 10, 15 years. We are a refugee resettlement agency. So every year when the U.S. admits a certain number of refugees to the country, it's not the federal government actually doing the process of walking alongside those folks when they first arrive. It's nonprofit agencies like World Relief. So we're one of 9 in the U.S. actually contracted to meet people when they first arrive.
That's amazing.
So that means we get case files of folks who are arriving. And then our caseworkers, we're a team of about 50 at the Seattle office, are there at the SeaTac airport welcoming families when they first arrive, and then walking with them through what's referred to as the resettlement process, which is about 3 to 6 months of all the things you could possibly imagine needing to do if you had landed in a new space, starting over new life. So that looks like finding housing, getting job applications out, kids enrolled in school, medical appointments, navigating the bus system, all of those things. So we're there for that whole process. But then over the years, it's pretty obvious as we talk to the people that we serve and we talk to the people in the community that 6 months is not enough.
Yeah.
So, as you might imagine. So once that federally sponsored resettlement season is over, we're still there. So that's where we have built out next generation programs, supporting families and youth as they navigate the school systems, especially through a pandemic. That's been crazy. Our immigration legal services team works with people who are then applying for their green cards after a year in the country and citizenship after 5 years. And then we have extended casework programs that support people who might need a little bit of extra help even after that 6 months. And I'm so excited. We have these resiliency programs that are listening to what people actually want, what people actually need, and then working with them to develop it out. So right now that looks like a community garden out in Kent where we have, I think we have 23 different countries represented in gardeners.
Wow.
That's right.
Who are farming there. And then this next year, it will look like a commercial teaching kitchen that's getting built out so people can actually preserve their food, sell things at farmers markets. And it looks like a women's sewing class. So we do so many things. But if I were to distill it down, I'd say we're really there for the welcoming and then the walking alongside of refugees, asylees, and other immigrants as they come to Washington State.
Man, that's incredible. I guess, is there a world relief in a lot of major cities around the U.S., or is it just basically every city, or how does it work in that way?
Yeah, World Relief is an international organization. So overseas, a lot of our World Relief locations are partnering with local communities to do education, economic empowerment, development. And then in the United States, there are, I believe, 13 offices around the U.S. who work primarily with refugees and immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And we are one of three offices in Washington State right now. We have sister offices in Tri-Cities and Spokane.
Okay. That's amazing. So you said, I know you said that you're basically coordinating church partnerships and volunteers, that kind of thing. What kind of things is World Relief need from volunteers or from churches? Like what are ways that the community gets involved? And you said it's a nonprofit. I'm sure there's a limited number of staff. There's stuff you can cast vision for programs. But what do volunteers do for World Relief?
Yeah, volunteers are, I would say, an essential part of why we're able to do what we can do. And one of the things that first drew me to World Relief when I started was seeing this nonprofit that was good at what they did, but they didn't do it alone. And so I'd say World Relief really excels in bringing the church and the broader community alongside, not just in the work, but in the understanding of why this is important and why we do this, why we are here. So volunteers for us are part of every program. They work with students one-on-one virtually right now as English tutors. They are facilitating and leading sewing classes. They are out in groups in the rain, in the snow, in our community garden, pulling out blackberry bushes.
Eating blackberries.
So for a lot of people, refugee care is just not even something they've ever really even thought about. Why is this work important?
Yeah, I think it's a conversation that happens with people who are arriving to understand why is this important, because it could be different for each person.
Mm-hmm.
But we know as you're new to a place, just imagine getting dropped somewhere, that it's a rebuilding of social capital, and it's a rebuilding of community, and it's a rebuilding of connection. So World Relief's vision is actually every refugee and immigrant welcomed by community, just that first part, but then also rooted in community and empowered for community. So that's the long game. And I think that's the important work that we do as the church, as the local community, to say, I will be here to maybe meet some immediate needs when you first arrive, but I'm not going anywhere. You're going to be my neighbor. I am your neighbor. I'm going to learn from you. You are going to learn from me. And that's really the strength that we see in our communities and the strength that we see people bringing in and people showing up with here in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chiang, I know you and Jean have had some involvement with World Relief in the past. What did that look like?
Well, I think a lot of it was led by my wife, Jean. She really tried to kind of, and she really had an interest in kind of with World Relief. And I think she partnered with, I think she's trying to like doing a couponing class and stuff like that. And I think she went down one time to the Kent area to do that with some of the refugees and stuff like that. So she did have some of these type of activities as a busy mom that she was doing. But for our group, we were kind of like, this is kind of our first step in terms of like, when, as our groups are focused on three things: gospel, generosity, and gratitude. And part of this is, you know, our generosity component is that we wanted to kind of commit to a regular kind of service. And we were, before even the whole Afghanistan crisis happened, we were actually going that direction already.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of wanting to do this. And so we were kind of taking steps towards this. And so our group is in this kind of learning mode right now, where we're kind of going through one of the books that recommended by World Relief, Welcoming the Stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that is like initially we were kind of learning. And then now we're going to kind of find out ways we can partner more with World Relief. And one of our challenges, I guess, more of a question to Liz, is how can us, our group, which has, you know, adults and kids, kind of be involved, I guess, so in kind of welcoming refugees and caring for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are so many ways that people can be involved, and some of that is individuals coming alongside, committing to being part of the English class or being a volunteer host home for a time. But then when there's groups and when there's kids, I think so much of that good, deep neighboring work happens in the conversations. It happens in learning together and not coming up with pat answers, but doing some research together. Yeah. And so that's where, like, we love having conversations with our communities and we love connecting people. One of the volunteer roles that we have is called a cultural companion.
Hmm.
And it's a 6-month commitment where you and potentially your family are matched with someone else and their family. And it's a partnership between your families to learn together, to grow, maybe practice some language, maybe explore your communities, maybe hang out and play Zoom games for a while, or enjoy the awkwardness of getting to know a complete stranger in a pandemic when you may not share fluency in a particular language together. But that is something that I've seen really transform an understanding of who is the other. And in this context, both of you are the other.
Mm-hmm.
Stranger is only a stranger from your perspective before you've known someone as a friend or before you've known someone as a neighbor.
Yeah.
So that's one of my favorite volunteer roles, especially for kids, especially for families.
Is there a limitation in terms of like region in the Seattle area and such that we can be involved, or do we have like, there's a little bit of a thought that we have to be closer to where the office, the World Relief office is, or does it matter?
Yeah, most of the folks that we work with settle around South King County, mostly because of housing.
Hmm.
So we work with people within a 100-mile radius of our office in Kent. But the biggest challenge for newly arriving families is finding affordable housing and becoming self-sufficient as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So from there, for volunteers and for churches and for partners, the biggest the question is how far are you willing to drive? How far are you willing to go? Because if you are 3 buses away and 2 hours away by public transit or 1 hour away by car, someone's got to do that work.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Through the pandemic, we've actually moved a lot of our programs, a lot of our communications virtually. And so a lot of our, like, our English tutors are all virtual still. And a lot of our cultural companions are still meeting virtually.
That's interesting. That's a probably a bit of a silver lining in a way, because it probably, I don't know, I'm sure it led to some people who wouldn't normally, you know, make the drive on a Friday or a Thursday afternoon or whatever, to be willing to just jump on a Zoom call.
Yeah, I'd say it actually has had some pretty cool benefits for our students, for our participants as well, because in our English classes that used to meet on site during the day, 1 to 3 p.m. in Kent, that meant that people were taking buses quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stopped taking English classes as soon as they had childcare needs or started a day job. But now we've actually, I think, We've more than doubled our students in our English class through the pandemic, because people are staying on. They're doing it modular. They're connecting to tutors. So I imagine that even if the pandemic ended tomorrow, we would still keep some kind of a hybrid model to be more accessible to our students, and also silver lining to our volunteers.
That's awesome. Well, that's a bit of a cut in the regional thing. I know you said Kent. Is there other hubs that are, because we're up in Woodinville up here. Are there other hubs of immigrants or refugees that are, you know, up further north or anything like that? I had heard some rumors of Everett and that kind of thing.
There's a pretty wide range. Some families are in the Everett, Linwood areas, some Federal Way, Auburn, Renton.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Another thing. Sorry, I'm going to ask some of the questions I anticipate folks are having. So one, you mentioned Pat Answers. to complex questions. And I'm wondering if there are some really typical pat answers that Americans bring in to refugee care that you could just dispel for us now. So
yeah,
we're not doing unnecessary damage.
Ooh, you all have great questions. I think one of the things that I have been learning myself as a cis white Christian woman is the individuality of experience, and not to put someone in a refugee box or what I assume is a refugee box. One book that I would highly recommend is Ungrateful Refugee, where I think as Americans or someone who see the plight of those with refugee status or asylum status on the news, we think, oh, they must be so grateful to be here. or they must be so grateful for this donation I am giving. Oh, and the reality is people may not have ever chosen to be here. And this is not someone who said, whew, good thing there's violence in my country and I'm going to apply for refugee status because I really want to get to the United States. Yeah. Some people may have been placed here in Washington because they have what we call a U.S. tie. So a family member or a relative here who helped them kind of navigate, figure out where they were going to go, give an address of where they could stay. But many did not. And so they could have ended up in any number of countries that accepted refugees, or any number of states, any number of communities. It just so happens that they're here. For many that we work with who have asylum status, so they're requesting asylum at the border with the same claim as a refugee, they may not know whether they're in Washington, D.C. or Washington State. It's very disorienting. So the idea that someone comes and is overwhelmingly grateful or just will take anything that you can give them, it's a box that we put people in, and it's an assumption that we make. And so that's one that I am continually learning, and we at World Relief are continually trying to bring other people alongside in our learning in that way.
Absolutely.
Follow up. Nomenclature is important. So like how, when we say refugee, that automatically puts somebody in a box in our own categories. What are some of the, and that may not, like you already mentioned two different categories, or three, I think, in the course of this recording. Are there some ways that we can also prevent unnecessary relational harm in the way that we talk about people that are having this experience?
I think really focusing on the people first language that I hear you using, people having this experience, people with refugee status, people who arrived as refugees, people who arrived as asylees. I think that's an important distinction to make. And I have colleagues at World Relief who have refugee or asylee background themselves. And so we've had conversations of what term do you prefer? Do you still identify as refugee or former refugee? And people will come up with different answers. People have different preferences. So really, again, asking someone how they would like to be referred to is important. But there are a couple different statuses that we're seeing. And refugee is interesting that we use it as a descriptive term for a person, but I wouldn't say hello, citizen, or hello, HB1 visa holder.
Right. Yeah.
So refugee is a status given to someone who has a well-founded fear of persecution, has crossed an international border, and their persecution is really specific based on who they are or what they believe. So that includes the five categories of race, nationality, political opinion, religion, or membership in a social group. And then asylee is the exact same definition, but rather than applying overseas, you are applying from within the country of asylum or at a border. So those are two statuses that we see quite frequently. Those are two statuses that allow someone the safety and the long-term protection here in the United States. It's a final stop. You can apply for your green card in a year, citizenship in 5 years. One thing we're seeing now, speaking of statuses, is the new humanitarian parolee status for those coming from Afghanistan. And I'm going to throw one more status at you. It's special immigrant visa holder. So that has been used for quite a few years for those from Iraq and Afghanistan who worked with U.S. military troops. And because of their work there, they and their families were under threat. So they would receive an SIV visa and come straight to the United States. So now we're seeing humanitarian, parolee, and SIV along with refugee and asylee.
It's a lot to keep track of.
It's a lot.
Yes.
So that's, I think, another reason why we think of people as humans with various experiences of persecution and flight and trauma and resilience. Another one I would add is, going back to that people first language, is especially in nonprofit fields, especially in caring or helping fields, you hear the word vulnerable used quite a lot. And I think at World Relief, it's important for us to recognize that we are working with people in vulnerable situations, but these are very strong, very resilient people.
Yes. Yeah.
We are seeing people in potentially one of the most vulnerable situations in their life, but they are not always going to be in that situation. And so not to freeze frame someone in a really disorienting season.
Yeah, that's really helpful, period, because we often refer to vulnerable children in foster care or vulnerable people who are experiencing homelessness or, you know, like that people first language, and then recognizing just to survive requires incredible invulnerability a lot of times.
Right. So, and there is nothing wrong with needing help, and there is nothing wrong with being vulnerable.
Yeah.
But it is not a permanent state.
I think one of my small group, so before this meeting, I kind of pulled my small group and said, oh, what do you guys, any questions you want to ask World Relief?
Great.
So this might have been already answered partly, but in what way is World Relief partnering with other other faith-based nonprofit organizations?
Yeah, so as a nonprofit, we are collaborating with all kinds of community organizations because we know we can't do it ourselves. So that includes the church all over Pierce, King counties. So that could be financial support or volunteers or just prayer and encouragement goes so far. And then we also collaborate with other local organizations, whether it's a church or another faith group. Folks who are coming into the U.S. might come from a variety of faith backgrounds or experiences. And so we're connecting them with mosques, Muslim Association. We've actually worked with quite a few folks coming in from Ukraine over the past couple of years. I think the past 3 years, most of the families that we were working with were either from Ukraine or Afghanistan.
Okay, that's fascinating. I mean, I was going to ask, I know you said there's I'm sure that it varies greatly depending on what's happening. And I'm sure right now, just based on the recent crisis, there's a large number of people from Afghanistan coming in. But where else where are we seeing people come from to World Relief Seattle?
It's really exciting and it's changing quickly. So who can come to the United States varies based in number, based on the presidential determination every year, and then also based on what policies are in place allowing or disallowing certain countries. So when the Muslim ban was in place, there were many people from around the world who had refugee status, who had cleared their vetting, but because they were from that particular country, were not allowed entry into the United States. So because of that, we saw majority people from Afghanistan on that SIV visa, having worked with the U.S. military, and from Ukraine. But then I mentioned asylees. Asylees go through a different process where instead of being processed overseas and then flying in, they'll flee, request asylum at the border. And in the United States, they will wait out their trial, their vetting process in an immigration detention center in the United States.
Brutal.
And we actually, it's brutal. And we actually have the fourth largest detention center in Tacoma, just about 30 minutes south of our office.
I had no idea.
So World Relief has a really cool ministry, really, of welcoming people who are coming out of that detention center. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we partner with another organization called Aid Northwest, and we have this RV. Aid Northwest has this RV that's parked outside the exit gates of the detention center. And when someone is released, you're kind of out in the port of Tacoma. If you've ever been there, it just looks like warehouses and maybe some parking lots. You can't see the city of Tacoma. You wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Where am I? Am I in Washington State? Where is the bus? Where is the airport? So we're there with volunteers, just welcoming people, saying welcome, congratulations, you're out. We have clothes, we have winter jackets. Often people are wearing what they showed up with, and have their documents in a plastic bag. And so we have backpacks and snacks and phones and volunteers ready to just help them with whatever next steps they have, whether that's connecting with family and friends in the U.S. or for those who have their asylum status and are staying in the area, then we enroll them on our programs and can walk with them through that whole resettlement process.
Wow.
Man, that's amazing. I know you've mentioned a little bit, you know, it depends on asylee versus refugee status. What are some of the realities of people that are coming, that World Relief is interacting with? I know it's hard, I know you can't boil, you know, hundreds of people's experiences down into one, but what are some of the things that you see, in people who are coming through World Relief?
I mean, going back to the question of where are people coming from, for those who have come through the detention center or have applied for asylum, we're seeing folks from Latin America, from different countries in Africa, and all around the world, and who have gone through potentially years and years of instability. I think one of the things that people will say is, when I fled my country, I never thought I would flee. I was the one who was going to stay. Mm-hmm. And then something happened and I had to go. But then it's this potentially years-long trial of going from place to place, trying to figure out where is a long-term permanent solution for you. Mm-hmm. And often ending up in the U.S. or for those with refugee status, that's kind of the last option.
Yeah.
So for many people that we see, it's been a very, very long process. The average wait for someone in a refugee camp or an urban area waiting for resettlement is 21 years, which is a generation.
Wow.
So for many people coming here to the U.S. from particular countries, it's felt like a lifetime.
Yeah.
And then for those right now coming from Afghanistan, it's a fairly different situation where they're coming here fairly quickly, but from an active conflict area.
Yep.
And often, almost always, having left friends and family behind. And because we've worked with folks from Afghanistan for so many years, there's quite a strong Afghan community here in the greater Seattle area. And there are they interpret with us, and they volunteer with us, and they garden with us. And it's been just so much grief for us and for the people that we've worked with to recognize that there are still people in Afghanistan who aren't able to get out or are in very tenuous situations.
Yeah. I'll ask you something personal. Like, I know you there's a lot of heaviness in what you see. What keeps you passionate? What keeps you engaged in working with World Relief and in all these situations where there's a lot of either past hurt or potential hardship ahead?
I think if I were speaking very personally, I started in refugee resettlement nonprofit with a savior complex, with wanting to save the world, with wanting to jump in and feel like I was doing some good. And, you know, come for the savior complex, stay for the community development. I think what's kept me here and what's kept me through, I was telling a colleague, like, we've never seen a normal season. We had Trump era immigration policies and then a pandemic and then crisis in Afghanistan. And it's just been layered and layered and layered. But for me, the opportunity to really be with a community that I grew up in, primarily the white evangelical church, and to say, we're missing some pieces, guys. Mm-hmm. We're missing the experiences and the expertise and the character of God that I see in newly arriving families and the immigrant and refugee communities who are strong here in Washington State. And so for me, using my role, my voice in my community to come alongside those and to elevate the voices of my colleagues and my coworkers and my community who do have refugee and immigrant experience.
That's rad.
That's why I stay.
Yeah.
How has your understanding of the character and activity of God changed over the last... I mean, I know it's a big question, but I want the answer.
I will get back to you on that one for sure as I continue learning. I think just the idea that there is infinitely more grace and infinitely more nuance to the character and the kingdom of God than I would ever be able to recognize or learn on my own, with my own experiences, with my own culture, with my own language, with my own particular upbringing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That is great. So what you're saying is, if you have a savior complex or something like that, just show up and it'll be beat out of you? Is that what it is? Or?
We'll deconstruct together. It'll there be great.
There you go. Sounds great.
So I have a question. Is it coming from, like, I guess, we're talking about a lot of trauma with all these Afghans moving to the, leaving their country in pretty much rapid kind of pace. Is there, how does World Relief provide kind of the emotional support or psychological support? Is there anything that World Relief is doing right now to do that?
Yeah, we work with some really good community partners who do have the expertise in behavioral health and mental health support. And it really is individual how someone wants to engage with mental health resources. So that could be someone getting connected to a provider or someone working with World Relief to get stable housing so they feel like they can breathe and they can rest and that they are safe. But we do a lot of referrals to folks who are mental health care experts and love working with medical providers and mental health providers who either have refugee immigrant experiences themselves or have staff who can speak the language of some of the people that we're working with.
Okay, that's good to hear.
I love that you had questions from your group. Do you have more?
Our group is really interested in kind of like trying to figure out, like I said, how we can get involved. And so Cultural Companion is one option. Can you explain more, at least, about what the kind of Good Neighbor kind of program is? Is that part of the Cultural Companion, or is that something in addition?
It is different than the Cultural Companion program. So the Good Neighbor Team program is something we started, I believe, in 2016. And it's a group of highly trained volunteers, usually from a church or a community partnering organization, that is walking alongside a newly arriving family for 6 months. We don't have a sponsorship system in the United States. That's something that we saw previously in U.S. history. But what we found at World Relief is there is something beautiful that happens when you can get plugged into community. Mm-hmm. And I know that's probably something that's very near and dear to Imprint's heart. So a Good Neighbor Team, I would say it's the deepest, most complex, most life-shattering deep dive you could take with World Relief and with a newly arriving family. We call it a partnership. So it's a partnership between the church and World Relief and a family. Mm-hmm. And so we do an 8-week training with you, with a church that we have a relationship with. And so those volunteers get their background checks and their vetting, and we do reference checks and applications. And then we go through an 8-week series with that team to help them understand what are all the pieces that go into refugee resettlement. And then that team gets to work kind of in tandem with our Good Neighbor Team coordinator and our caseworker and our employment specialist to see that family through all of the logistics that they need when they first arrive. So that can be finding housing, helping them find jobs, kids, lots of appointments with medical care providers depending on their needs, and just building good relationships. Mm-hmm.
So do churches, like one church kind of partners with become a Good Neighbor Team and supports one family through the whole transition then?
Mm-hmm. Yep, one church, one family.
Okay. What are those relationships historically, not what they could look like, but what have they historically looked like after the 6 months? Are there any stories you could tell that wouldn't break confidentiality? That would give some folks listening an idea of what may happen?
Yeah, I actually recently did a series of listening sessions and interviews with past Good Neighbor Team volunteers, church leaders, and the participants, the families that had been in Good Neighbor Teams themselves. And it was so interesting to hear the stories, because there was, I think in every team, there was probably about half of the team, the volunteers, who are still in contact with that family. One of them was part of a Good Neighbor Team so long ago, 4 years ago, and now they're going to this person's wedding. Mm. So very deep relationships, continued conversations and support happening there. And then some volunteers were like, yeah, it was so much. It was so much time. It was so much work. It was emotionally more than I was prepared for. So I really had to take a break afterwards. Mm. And either one, I think, is great. I think that's just fine. One fun story is when, so World Relief Seattle was established in 1979, right when the United States started the refugee resettlement program officially. And one of the first families that was resettled through World Relief, originally from Vietnam, and they were welcomed by a church in what was essentially a Good Neighbor team, that we didn't have that name for it yet. And now, 20 plus years later, oh gosh, more than 20 years.
You do math like I do. 40.
Yeah, generally.
42, I guess.
That family has been leaders of a Good Neighbor team with their church who first resettled them.
Wow, cool.
In the 70s.
So. Rad.
And we're actually working with another Good Neighbor team with them now.
They live here now. They're probably not going back. How many folks that end up here end up, you know, say crisis passes, how many people end up going back versus how many end up deciding to stay?
Oh, that's a very insightful question. So zooming out, for everyone who actually gets refugee status, can prove it with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, it's about 26 million people right now who are eligible for refugee status. And it's 0.1% of those who would ever get resettled to another country like the United States.
Right. Who'll go through the vetting, the long wait times, et cetera, and actually land here in Washington State.
And it's not just the vetting. They can clear that. It's the, is there a spot for them? To be resettled.
Yep.
Is there enough spaces to be resettled? And it's very, very few.
Mm-hmm.
And so the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees has three what they call durable solutions. First and best option is to return to your country of origin. Maybe something has passed, political regime has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Second best option, if that is not an option, is settle to the place where you first fled, maybe in the region or the area.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is not an option, your third and final durable solution is to be resettled to a third country like the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who do come to the U.S., this was their third and final option.
Mm.
So very few end up going back home. Mm-hmm. Many might, once they have their green card, once they have their citizenship, go back and visit family or meet them in another country and be able to travel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as common.
Yeah.
So I know that it's a multifaceted solution, like you were saying. It's not World Relief doing it on its own. It's World Relief partnering with other nonprofits, partnering with churches, other public programs, that kind of thing. What does it look like for a church to be a good and successful partner with World Relief?
Oh, I love that question. I think some of our dearest and closest partners with the church are those who have stayed through the crisis of many, many people arriving, have stayed through the very lean funding years of the refugee resettlement program almost shutting down completely in the U.S., have stayed through a pandemic when we couldn't hang out and have coffee hour or heartwarming barbecues together, and have shifted the way they have engaged with either new arrivals or with us as an organization based on the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same as you would with any friendship, with any relationship. Sometimes there are seasons where you are building a house together, and sometimes there are seasons where you're awkwardly having game night over Zoom together. And, so, and that's kind of the way it goes with church relationships too. For churches, I think there's always this pull to want to serve with your hands, with your actions.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. And I love that. And that's part of the reason why we partner with churches the way we do. Because there is this intentionality, is I don't just want to learn about something. I want to really do something and have it impact me and my family and my life in the way that I think and the way that I worship, really.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our best partners have sponsored us financially, because we aren't going to be doing much of anything if we don't have private funding, and then are volunteering with us, and then we are transforming each other together by having conversations, by having book studies, by learning together about the needs.
Mm.
And I would say, like relationships, every church is different. You have a personality, you have a culture, you have a language that you use, you have a location. And so whether it's with a majority Spanish-speaking church or a white evangelical church or a Ukrainian Orthodox church, we're there to learn as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, so you guys have a couple things coming up. One is the home-to-home thing that you're doing with the gala. Could you tell us a little bit about Home to Home and the fundraising event?
I'm so excited about the From Home to Home exhibit. So we have our annual largest fundraising gala coming up October 15th. We're doing it in person at the Hilton in Bellevue and also online for virtual tickets. But because of the pandemic situation this year, we're actually opening up our From Home to Home walkthrough exhibit for the whole week before the gala, so October 11 to 14. And it's available for small groups to financially contribute and then walk through the exhibits in kind of a partially guided tour, and then have a conversation with World Relief staff, some chai, some samosas afterwards, and kind of debrief the experience. If I were to describe the From Home to Home exhibit, if you've ever been through like a museum exhibit or even like a Stations of the Cross, it's kind of a contemplative walkthrough of not putting yourself in someone else's shoes, but walking through as yourself. What is the experience of fleeing, seeking asylum, or refugee status? What might you carry with you through that experience? What might you lose? And what does it look like to go from home to home again?
So that's open to groups and individuals.
I highly recommend if you do it, come as a group, because then you have that conversation piece, that shared experience piece.
Yep.
And we can give you a two-hour block all to yourself.
Sweet. And that's for groups up to 25 people?
Up to 25 people. It's at a public Hilton space, so it's ages 12 and up with proof of vaccination.
Great.
Okay.
Awesome. And then also, could you just like say somebody is curious, this is the first time they've ever even thought about World Relief. What would be a good next step for them to like determine if this would be a good ministry for them to be a part of?
I would say check out our website. There is so much good information on there. I read our website and find something new every single day. We are worldrelief.org/Seattle, and you can learn about who we are, all of our volunteer roles, the programs that we offer to the community. If you are someone who owns a business and employs people, we have a spot for employers to post job positions. If you are an apartment owner and are thinking about renting to someone with refugee or asylee background, that is a huge need right now as people are arriving looking for affordable housing. We have a way for you to contact us about that. And if you are someone who is a community organizer and loves to read and to share, maybe has a podcast, we love to provide you with resources to do that well.
I'll keep an ear out. So, yeah.
Let me know if you know anyone.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. So in terms of like in terms of next steps and such, like how can like a small group, like, I mean, what is the greatest need right now that you have? I know that World Relief seems to have right now at this stage a lot of people are interested in helping and providing support. What is the greatest need that World Relief has right now?
That is a beautiful question. If I were to be truly honest, and I will with you all because you're friends, our biggest need right now is patience and financial contributions.
Yep.
We went from, you know, we're not a huge organization, and we are used to getting 1 to 2 volunteer applications a day, maybe speaking with a church every month, getting some financial means in. We went from that to 50 applications a day.
Oh my goodness.
We got 2,000 volunteer applications in a week.
Wow.
Just huge numbers. I have one volunteer coordinator on my team.
Oh my goodness.
She's amazing. She would love your prayers.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's her name? We'll pray for her.
Her name is Angela. And so we know that right now we are absolutely at capacity. I'm actually going to be taking our volunteer application down from our website, just temporarily. Don't worry, it will be back because the media moves on.
Yep.
And refugee resettlement won't be the thing on the front page of the news every day for 5 weeks as it has been recently. But we will still be here.
Yeah.
And the folks that are arriving will still be here. And Imprint Church will still be here. So that's where your patience is amazing, knowing that we are completely maxed out right now. But come January, we still have English classes. We still have garden work days. Mm-hmm. We still have cultural companions, needs for good neighbor teams. Mm-hmm, all of that will still be there. Yep. And I say financial donations, not just because we're a nonprofit and we always ask for that, but because right now we are seeing the humanitarian parolee status for folks coming in from Afghanistan. And this means that someone is here for 2 years, with the opportunity to adjust their status when they come. So the idea is the U.S. had to get people out of Afghanistan as quickly as possible to a safe location, which is here to the United States, and they will probably be eligible for asylum once they're here, but we don't have time for them to apply for asylum outside of the U.S. So they have 2 years here. But that also means that federal funding that someone with refugee status or asylum status might get, they are not receiving. It's very, very limited.
Man. So those first 6 months, that's world relief.
That's out of pocket. Funds.
That's private funds.
Yep.
So we are still offering the same resettlement services to someone on humanitarian parolee as we would refugee or asylee. But that's coming from private and local funds. And we've done a lot of gift card drives. So that is seeing families through because they're not eligible to apply for some of the state benefits.
Yep.
I see.
Man. Cool.
Man, lots of ways for us to be generous as a church. It's cool.
So besides, I think the upcoming gala, and is there ways to fundraise or anything like that for World Relief?
Oh, there are ways to fundraise. Well, I would say...
Like a group can, like a small group can kind of want to help fundraise or anything? Yeah, just wondering what we can do.
Absolutely. And I'd say right when people first arrived, we pushed welcome kits really hard, which was physical donations of kitchen items and bathroom items. We have had so many things come in that we have three English classes who aren't meeting in real life right now that are all full of welcome kits.
Amazing.
Floor to ceiling.
That's awesome. I know our kids ministry is actually putting some more together this Sunday. So
yes, and we love them, and we will take them, and we will find space for them. But if you were starting something new, if it wasn't already in motion, gift cards are way better because they are easier to store.
Yeah.
Nice. It also gives families the opportunity to choose the things that they want to purchase. And once they have a welcome kit that gives them the basics, they can fill it in with the things that are particular to them.
And all of that is on your website as far as the stores for gift cards that are going to be most helpful and the updated needs. Your website is updated often.
Yes, so it is updated often. I am the one doing the updating. Oh. So if you were like,
hey, I've read your work. It's great. Thanks.
You're like, hey, Liz. That looks weird. Just email me, send it over. Same with social media. Like, Liz, we hated that post. It was good too.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that, you know, you want to communicate just, you know, being in the middle of this every day to people who geographically we're pretty far, and then also experientially we're pretty far away from what these people are going through. Anything else that you would want to say or leave us with?
I mean, I think location does matter because it's hard to just meet someone on your daily commute. But we have been living through a pandemic for a year and a half where all of a sudden location means something different to all of us. And being intentional about finding ways to connect and to learn and to reflect is a season that we have all been going through. And the folks that we are meeting here, they have been through the same pandemic and they are quarantining when they arrive and figuring out vaccines. So it's not so different, but I think just the posture of not assuming that you know something about someone and being able to come alongside and say, what would be the most helpful right now? And where do you find yourself in this season, even before asking for someone's story or asking how you can help?
Yeah.
Seems pretty Jesus-y.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'd say.
We're all about Jesus-y.
Yeah, we like Jesus-y stuff here too, quite a bit. Well, Liz, if somebody has a question that's not answered on the website, how can they get in touch? How can they reach out to people at World Relief to get that answered?
You are welcome to email me directly. My email is lnelson, L-N-E-L-S-O-N, @wr.org. I might answer you quickly, or I might not answer you quickly, depending on...
If you can get past all the welcome kits to your computer. And that kind of thing.
Exactly. You say imprint church question at the top.
Sounds good. Well, Liz, thank you so much for your time. This was a great experience. Really insightful, really helpful for me, and I'm sure it will be for people listening along.
Great. Happy to be here.
Sweet. That's all for now.
See y'all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.